And I would ask that anyone online identify themselves, please.
This is Dan Wayne. I'm online.
Thank you.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Today we will have a full agenda for the committee. Apparently we expect the meeting to last about 2.5 hours. And I would like to begin by asking for an approval of the agenda, which is tab A in the folders that everyone has received.
I might note one item for our agenda.
Go ahead.
With that, we have the tab E, which is the rules of procedure on the agenda. And with member Joyce Anderson, her chair, not being available and being the principal architect of that document of the changes in the rules of procedure, I'd ask that that be withdrawn as the members would so desire.
Does anyone have an objection to the recommendation that Jerry has made or have any questions about why the request has been made? Hearing none, let's move that item to the meeting in January, if that's acceptable to anyone. I believe it is. Thank you. And thank you, Senator Elby Gray Jackson, for the second. Any discussion? No objections. I believe that the agenda is approved. And next, an approval of the minutes. That would be tab B in your packet. Could I get a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved, Connor Thomas.
Thank you, Connor. A second? Thank you, Senator Coghill. Any objection? Hearing none, minutes are approved. Next up, tab C, the subcommittee minutes. A motion to approve those minutes, please.
If this is Skip, also move.
Second.
Any objection? Second by Mr. Fitzgerald. Any objection? Hearing none. The subcommittee minutes have been approved. And now we move on to item number 4, which would be public comment. Does anyone have any public comment that they would like to bring forward?
I do.
Could you just identify, we're trying to furiously take notes here in snowy Anchorage. If you could just identify who I is.
Yes, my name is Carolyn Dykus. I am a resident of Wasilla.
And Carolyn, could you spell your last name for me, please?
Yes, it's D as in dog, I-C-U-S.
D as in dog, I-C-U-S.
Yes.
Carolyn, thank you so much. Go ahead.
As I said, my name is Carolyn Dykus, and I am a wife and mother of 3 small children here in Wasilla. And for the last couple of years, I've been following my district's elected representative, David Eastman, on Facebook. And I've become increasingly disturbed and alarmed by the way he has been allowed to conduct himself on social media. I've been in contact with Jerry Anderson regarding my concerns, and today I am asking that Representative Eastman's multiple official social media profiles be examined and condensed to a single profile, that when he posts in the future, that what he posts in the future is consistent with and no longer in violation of the current Alaska legislature's social media guidelines, and that the existing social media guidelines are reviewed and updated as needed to prevent future misconduct by our elected officials. Here are a few excerpts from the current Alaska legislature's social media guidelines that Mr. Eastman may need to reread. Quote, perception is reality. Just by identifying yourself as a state employee or elected official, you are creating perceptions about your expertise. Be sure that all content associated with you is consistent with your work and with the legislature's professional standards. Write what you know. Make sure what you write and post about is in your areas of expertise. social communication should add value. It should be thought-provoking and build a sense of community, end quote. If these are the guidelines for how a representative is to conduct themselves online, how is it okay for Mr. Eastman to regularly post misinformation, satire, bigoted opinion pieces, and divisive partisan rhetoric? How is it improving knowledge or solving problems to post anti-trans propaganda on Trans Remembrance Day? How is it relevant or professional for him to post ghoulish, graphic accounts of fetuses being dismembered on Mother's Day? Over and over again, Mr. Eastman chooses to use his position of power to rile, inflame, and influence constituents with his personal religious agenda. I think he needs to be reminded that he exists in an official capacity to represent his constituents and the state of Alaska, not himself or his religion. And as a woman and mother in his district, I feel that my rights and my children's future rights are directly threatened by his attempts to misinform voters in this community about important human rights issues such as LGBTQ inclusivity and access to safe legal abortion. I realize Alaska has many much bigger problems, but this is important. With most people looking online for news and information, an elected official's social media presence can have a powerful impact on public opinion and policy. And it is therefore crucial that our leaders conduct themselves ethically and with integrity at all times. Thank you for your time.
Carolyn, thank you for your comments. I can tell that you put a lot of thought into them, and we appreciate you being part of the process.
Thank you. I hope that you guys will hear what I said and hopefully take action.
That brings us to any other public comments. Jackie, anything online that you can identify? Thank you very much. That brings us to item number 5, which is an advisory opinion noted as tab D. And I believe that, Dan, you would like to speak to this, your opinion on this.
Thank you. This is Dan Wayne from Ledge Legal. I drafted this opinion. On the first page are the three questions that I was asked to answer in the draft. I printed them just the way that I received them. The opinion starts out, there were no facts involved in this case. The opinion starts out with setting forth the statute itself on the first page. And then it just goes through the questions. And I'm really not, I guess I can just go to the conclusion and tell you what I concluded in the draft and then answer any questions that you might have.
I think that would be great. I think that that would be fine. Thank you very much. And for those of you in the audience, this is a draft advisory opinion regarding compassionate gifts. Go ahead, Dan. Thank you.
So the first question was, what persons are entitled to make a request for a compassionate gift exemption under AS 2460.075B and E? Is this class of persons limited to the, quote, recipient or a member of the recipient's immediate family, end quote? And so in the conclusion says, legislators and legislative employees are the only persons entitled to request a compassionate gift exemption under AS 2460.075. And that's, you know, really just based on the plain reading of 2460.075, which says a legislator or a legislative employee may solicit, receive, or accept a compassionate gift from a person subject to the limitations of this section. The second question was, what is the full extent of persons entitled to be a recipient of a compassionate gift exemption under AS 2460.075E? Does the term recipient refer to the actual person who's incurred the qualifying catastrophe, tragedy, or health-related emergency? I think what this is getting at is that the subsection cited 2460.075E mentions it's a basically definition of compassionate gift, saying that a compassionate gift is a solicited or unsolicited gift intended to aid or comfort a recipient or a member of the recipient's immediate family. So some people reading this might think, okay, that means that a member of a recipient's immediate family can request a gift. And in this opinion, the way I drafted it says, no, only a legislator or a legislative employee can solicit a compassionate gift, accept a compassionate gift, or receive a compassionate gift. And that's not to say that someone in their family may not benefit from it, but the person who had the transaction with the gift, has to be a legislator or a legislative employee that is on the receiving side and soliciting side of the transaction. And that's just the way that the statute's written. There's nothing in there about anybody else being able to do it. So conclusion number two, a member of a legislator's or legislative employee's immediate family may not solicit a compassionate gift unless they are also a legislator or legislative employee. Obviously, if they happen to be employed by the legislature or serve in the legislature, then they're covered by the Legislative Ethics Act as well, and they can solicit and accept and receive gifts. However, they may receive aid and comfort from a compassionate gift when they're a member of the immediate family of a legislator or legislative employee who receives the compassionate gift. The third question, what information is required in a request for a compassionate gift exemption under AS 2460.075B? And here I just, I went through the statute and I made it, a list of everything I could think of that's specifically called for, explicitly called for in that statute. And I may have added a couple things to it as well. And, of course, the committee's free to review this list and, modify it and add or take away from it. But the way that I answered the question was, in order for a written request to satisfy the requirements of 2460.075, it should, at a minimum, contain number one, the identity of the legislator or legislative employee requesting the gift. Number two, the identity of the legislator or legislative employee who is the recipient of the gift. Number three, the identity of the person who is the source of the gift, if known. Number four, a description of the gift. Number five, the fair market value of the gift to the extent its fair market value can be determined, and there's a word missing there, so we need to fix that in the conclusion. The word market is missing. And number six, a description of how the gift will aid or comfort the recipient or a member of the recipient's immediate family in contending with a catastrophe, a tragedy, or a health-related emergency. So if I'd left something off, I may have left something off of there that people think is important, and that would be a good thing to discuss today. Or maybe there's something on there that needs more explanation or doesn't belong there. That's up for discussion as well. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Madam Chair, this is Connor Thomas. I do have a question.
Connor, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Dan, on number two, question two.
Yes.
And the last part, does the term recipient refer to the actual person who has incurred the qualifying catastrophe, tragedy, or health-related emergency? What is the answer there? I mean, I'm taking it that the answer is no from this, but I don't see that it's directly addressed.
Well, okay, it could. First of all, a recipient is a legislator or a legislative employee. So it it might refer to them if it, if they are the actual person, or well, it, let's put it this way: it always refers to a legislator or a legislative employee, and so if it's a member of the that person's immediate family, that it is the one who's incurred the qualifying catastrophe and so forth, then the recipient is not referring to that person. I don't know how to put it. I mean, I think we talk about it and kind of, you know, we started off with answering the first question and maybe covered it there, I think. And then by the time we get to question three, there's not, you know, I guess we could just repeat the same information, but
Connor, is that not clear to you?
Well, I think I get it. I mean, basically the answer is no. I mean, it could be the recipient's going to have to be a legislative employee, but if the catastrophe is something that occurred to the immediate family member, then the recipient would still be the legislator or legislative employee, but not necessarily the same person who suffered the catastrophe. Is that correct?
Dan, would that be correct? That's how I would read it, but is that how you would interpret that?
I can you say that again? I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, the way I understand this is that the recipient is always going to be the legislator or legislative employee. However, the person who suffered the catastrophe, the qualifying event, doesn't necessarily have to be the legislator or the legislative employee that's requesting the exemption. It could be an immediate family member of that legislator or a legislative employee.
That's absolutely right. That I think, and that's what I tried to say here. It is a little complicated. I'm not sure adding more words makes it less complicated. I struggle with trying to find a way to, you know, be concise to explain it, you know, to answer the questions and not just add another, well, you know, let's look at it another way and that sort of thing. We could do that if you want to do that.
No, I'm satisfied with that answer. I just want to make sure I understood that was the answer.
We have some questions, Representative Coghill, and then I'm sorry, Senator Coghill, and then Senator. Yeah, Senator Gray Jackson. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. And I've got a question too after that.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see on page 2 the definition of compassionate gift. But I really need clarification and probably an example of what we're talking about in terms of a compassionate gift. Are we talking about GoFundMe? Are we talking about flowers? Are we talking about buying somebody a house because they lost their house? So I would really appreciate an example of what a compassionate gift means. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Coghill.
Is it? This is Dan Wayne. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to answer that or if maybe Senator Coghill has been involved in creating the compassionate gift exemption and modifying it over the years, could probably speak to it as well.
Yes, Dan.
Mr. Skip, I could give an example from past gifts that the committee approved.
Okay, Skip, go ahead.
Well, we had a senator, senator from Nome, who had cancer, and he was needing treatments, and he requested that he receive some compassionate gifts to assist with his travel and treatment that resulted from that. That's one I readily remember. They have all been from the person who was injured requesting a gift for their own tragedy.
Senator Coghill, would you add to that?
Some of the details to that. The senator had a kidney problem, and one of the legislative employees wanted to donate a kidney. And our rules did not allow that. And so we put together this compassionate gift. And then the wife of the senator, who I think he was representative, I'm sorry, the wife of the representative had to handle the gift. And so you see how they have, they're going to be able to manage it, but they can't request it. I mean, they can't receive it. They can request it on the behalf of the legislator. And so one of them was the representative needed a compassionate gift. It was a kidney. One legislative employee wanted to donate the kidney, was prohibited from, so we made that available. And the wife of the legislator needed to be able to handle it. And so that's how you have this kind of mixture of words in here, I think, that help the family member manage it. But the request can come from that family member, but it's for the legislator or for the person donating, I think. Although I don't know that it was contemplated at the time. But the prohibition on donating a kidney to a city legislator was just there. And so that's what generated this conversation. A burned house or anything like that would be a whole different topic. But this was really meant for those who know and live and work with each other if there is a transfusion or something like that. And that's why the market value was so difficult to define, because what is the market value of a kidney, for example? It's really the cost of the operation. And I think, Dan, if you leave the word value in there without putting market value, that's fine with me because of that very issue. So it's something that you might want to think about. But there is certainly a market value for a kidney if you look at what you'd have to do to solicit organ donation. You probably could find that out. But it really comes down to a value question. So those are three parts of it that I remember.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I address just the point about value?
Please.
I got the term market value from the statute, subsection D. It says the value of the gift shall be determined by the fair market value. So we could say value, but it's always going to be fair market value.
Right. I understand that. And we could put it in your opinion. That's fine with me, because at some time or other, if you're going to talk about a heart transplant or something like that from a donation, which I've had happen in my own family, where we had a youngster in my family die and they donated a heart, you would probably struggle with how to make that a fair market value, but you could probably figure it out.
Madam Chair, may I also like to say something else before we continue on? It might help, I guess, frame the issues a little bit.
Yes, go ahead.
Clearly. One thing that I kept trying to remind myself while I was drafting this was that, you know, the Ethics Act only applies to legislators and legislative employees, and in some cases it applies to members of the committee and former legislators. But for purposes of these gift statutes, they apply just to legislators and legislative employees. Yes, they mention lobbyists, as in, you know, you can, in 2460.080, you can't receive a gift from a lobbyist. The 2460.080 doesn't say a lobbyist can't give you one. That's under another statute. It mentions family, but, you know, a family member isn't, you can't file an ethics complaint against a family member. You can't file an ethics complaint against a lobbyist. Mm-hmm. So the Ethics Act doesn't prevent a person who's not a legislator or a legislative employee from going out to do a GoFundMe campaign or raise money or solicit gifts and so forth. So that's, you know, that's another thing that kind of complicates things, but I just want to make sure that nobody's sitting there going, wait a second, you mean I'm not a legislator or a legislative employee, and so I can't solicit a gift or, you know, accept a gift? And, you know, that wouldn't be the case.
Thank you, Dan. Senator Ray Jackson, do you have any, does that make that clearer?
Clear. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other discussions or comments?
Yeah, this is Skip. If we're down to me, I've got a question.
Go ahead, Skip.
Dan, on page 3, first full paragraph, you say AS 2460075 allows a legislator or legislative employee to request a compassionate gift for himself or herself, or for another legislator or legislative employee. I don't read the statute that way. I agree that the legislator or legislative employee may request a compassionate gift for himself or herself. But when I read 2460075A, it says a legislator or legislative employee may solicit, receive, or accept a gift from a person subject to limitations. It doesn't say they can request it for another person. They can request a gift from a person, but it doesn't say that they can request it for another legislator that I can see.
Dan, can you respond to that?
I think that, you know, you could, if the committee could interpret it narrowly like that, if it chooses to, it wouldn't be legally wrong to do that. It wouldn't, you know, it's reasonable. You can also interpret it the other way, the way that I've interpreted it in this paragraph.
And where do you get from that language? I just don't see from that language where you can get that they can request on behalf of another person. It says they can request the gift from a person, but it doesn't say they can request it for somebody else.
Well, because it's saying that they can request a gift can request a gift from my dad for my kid.
No, that's fine. You're saying that they can request a compassionate gift for another legislator or another legislative employee.
Another legislative employee or legislator can receive a gift. They can accept a gift.
Well, they can certainly receive a gift, and you know, if a person comes forward with an unsolicited gift, that could be received by a legislator, but certainly that's the way it's written. But I don't see any language that says the legislator, legislative employee, who is, you know, can come in and say, oh, I think you should trigger the gift set statute for another person. I think that person is the one that can solicit on behalf of themselves.
I mean, under 2460080, sometimes a similar kind of thing comes up where I think there's even a rule that allows legislators to solicit, accept, receive gifts on behalf of others, you know, for charity, for example. And, you know, why do we have in the statute the word accept and receive? You know, aren't they the same thing? You know, maybe one of them is for, you know, okay, I'll receive the gift, but someone else will accept it, or however you want to divide it up. But as long as the person who is receiving the gift is a legislator or legislative employee, seems like another legislator or legislative employee would be allowed to request or to solicit the gift.
Well, I don't disagree that might be nice, but it doesn't say that.
Well, I mean, that's what's happened, though. That's the history of it. I think the whole kidney example involves staffers, you know, out there beating the bushes for help, you know. If memory serves, and Senator Cogham was probably in a better position to comment, but I don't think it was just a legislator going around saying, you know, I need a kidney.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Please, Senator Coghill.
Dan's exactly right. And the safeguard that was put in subsection B, that it would be before the Legislative Council on review, because it gets into that area where we want to make sure that it's done orderly and that it's an appropriate matter. So, but it's a fact. You don't want to make somebody a bad actor because they're looking out for somebody else's well-being. That's what.
No, I agree. I agree with that, but I just don't know if the statute fits to that situation. The statute said they can solicit for themselves or another, but it only says that they can solicit for themselves. It doesn't say that they can solicit. It doesn't say that, but maybe I understand how the practice. Certainly you want people to be compassionate.
Are there other comments on that particular line in Dan's opinion? Connor, do you have any questions about that?
I do. I'm looking at this, and I guess I would ask Skip. I mean, it does say legislative only, and the just as a legislative employee may solicit. I mean, it doesn't really say for themselves, does it? I mean, where do you get that part, Skip?
Well, there's it doesn't say for themselves, or it doesn't say for others either. So
yeah, and so it looks. I mean, to me, this kind of goes back a little bit to the first question that I had, was whether or not the recipient has to be the one that's suffered the catastrophe. If the answer is no to that, then I'm kind of thinking that reading it broader, like Dan has, is acceptable.
I'll sort of withdraw my objection.
Well, I think you bring up a valid point that some of us that don't have the history didn't know. So thank you for that. Does anyone have any other comments, clarifications on this? Are we ready to call a question, Jerry? Jerry, would you please read the summary and take a roll call on the advisory opinion draft?
Formal advisory opinion AO 1906 advises what persons may make a request for a compassionate gift exemption under AS 2460-075 and who may be the recipient of a gift under that section. This advisory opinion states what information is required in a request for a compassionate gift exemption. There will be a roll call vote to concur or not concur with the draft opinion. A vote of yes will be a vote to concur with the draft opinion. A vote of no will be to not concur with the draft opinion. With that, I have just one minor amendment that was brought out. That was just the addition of the word market on page 7, third line from the end of the opinion. But other than that, that would be the only amendment that I noted through the discussion. With that, then, we're ready to proceed. I'll do the roll call.
Please.
Senator L.B. Gray Jackson.
Yes.
Representative Louise Stutes.
Yes.
Member Skip Cook.
Yes.
Member Connor Thomas.
Yes.
Member Deb Fancher.
Yes.
Patrick Fitzgerald.
Yes.
Senator John Coghill.
Yes.
With that vote of 7-0, to concur with the draft opinion. This is one amendment.
Thank you, Dan. That brings us to item number 6, which we have bumped until we've moved this to the January meeting when Joyce will be back. So that will take us to the chair and staff report, old business. Please note tab F in the materials. And there's
Madam Chair, this is Dan Wayne. May I be excused?
I believe, Jerry, is there anything else?
Nothing else for Mr. Wayne?
No. Yes, you may, Dan. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Bye.
Two things under tab F is the internship program change, which I believe there's nothing to report. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then the National Conference of State Legislators Ethics Training on January 20, 2020. Everyone in the room aware of that?
With that, there'll be two sessions.
Madam
one
Chair?
In that morning.
1 minute. Was that Representative Stutz?
It was. Unfortunately, I have nothing under tab F, so maybe that could be forwarded to me.
I think.
With the note that we had, Representative Stutz, we were noting that there was nothing prepared for that, just oral for tab F. And so we tried to just note on the record that there was no materials actually in tab F.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't have anything when I got there either.
So we have two sessions that we have set up for new employees. This would not include existing legislators or existing legislative employees that are going to be primarily presented by the National Conference of State Legislators. They'll be doing the portion that we've previously had the Alaska Human Rights personnel do, and they'll also be doing part of the other general ethics program, two people from out of state that they have volunteered to do, and we're going to record those sessions for any persons that are unable to attend the January 20th session. I know that we've had a number of our public members, because we have scheduled our meeting on January 21st at 2 p.m., that had intended to perhaps take in the January 20th session in the afternoon. And, of course, legislative members are also welcome to attend that to get a flavor of the ethics training that's being conducted. But it will be only 3 hours in length, considerably less than our 6 hours and 10 minutes online that we have now. And so that may be a welcome relief for a few people just because of the length of that. But those are the only comments that I have with regard to two things that came up in our previous meeting.
Thanks, Jerry. And I apologize. I have a big note sitting in my own notes that says there's no tab F material. So for that, I was properly presented and fell on my head. That brings us to item number 8, the State Benefit and Loan Program. There is material under tab G, H, and I. We need to delete one program from a list, Appendix C. And I would ask for a motion to approve this deletion, or if anyone needs any clarification, by all means, ask.
Madam Chair, this is
yes.
Representative
Clarification.
And I'm
Thank you.
So moved.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, Senator Gray Jackson, and what else was there?
Representative Stutz, I made the motion.
One moment, just a little bit of clarification. Jerry, if you could just kind of briefly let Senator Jackson know about, I'm sorry, Gray Jackson know what that's all about.
All right. We have a list of programs that are subject to disclosure if a legislator or legislative employee participates in any of those programs, and those are referred to as our Appendix C because they appear in the handbook as Appendix C. And so we've got the new list that's in the materials. The one that we've taken off is based on our polling of the different departments is the UA Land Management Program, which they have informed us no longer exists, and so therefore it would not be subject to any disclosure because the program is no longer viable, and they've requested that it be removed from our Appendix C list, and that's what the vote and action that the Ethics Committee is looking at this point in time.
Thank you.
And
Madam Chair, this is Connor Thomas. I do have one question to Jerry.
Go ahead, Connor.
Jerry, the list that we have is the updated list without the UA land management program under me. I don't see it on the list, so I'm assuming that's what this is.
Yes, that was the one that would have been on the last item on Appendix C. And if you'll note, it is shown as Appendix C 2020 what the list will be, even though on the first page of that, I note for Jackie that we have still 2019 on it, but it would be the 2020 list as shown on the footers.
That's what I want to know.
On the footers.
All right.
And with that amendment, changing page C1 to 2020 Alaska State Benefit and Loans Program, Loan Program, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, this is Representative Stutz, and I so move.
Thank you. A second?
Second.
A second by Senator Gray Jackson. Is there any objection? Do we need a roll call vote on that, Jerry, or no?
I have done that.
We do need a roll call vote on that?
Madam Chair, I think with people online, I think that's probably the best thing.
Then I would ask Jerry to call the roll, please, for a roll call vote. Vote in the affirmative agrees to take that off.
This is for the deletion of the UA land management program from the Appendix C list of programs that need to be disclosed if participated in by a legislator or legislative employee. Senator John Coghill.
Yes.
Senator L.V. Gray Jackson.
Yes.
Representative Louise Stutz.
Yes.
Member Skip Cook.
Yes.
Member Connor Thomas.
Yes.
Member Deb Fancher.
Yes.
Member Patrick Fitzgerald.
Yes.
With that 7-0 vote, that will be amended then, and Appendix C will come in our Standards of Conduct Handbook without that program.
Thank you, Jerry. And last, we move to other business. We are looking at our next meeting to take place in Juneau on January 21st. And if people could check their calendars.
This would be at 2 p.m. To accommodate the opening of the legislative session.
I believe hearing no one object, and that day is a holiday, just for everyone's records. That is Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. So just...
That the meeting would be the day after the Monday
yes.
holiday?
Sorry, that's correct. Sorry, I was looking at a 2019 calendar. Yep. Everyone has that? Awesome. I would make a recommendation that someone move for adjournment.
Move to adjourn.
A motion made by Senator Gray Jackson. Second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fitzgerald. We are adjourned as of 10:25 on December the 2nd. Thank you so much. Thank you.
We're good to go.
Okay, thank you. And so I would now call to order the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics House Subcommittee meeting scheduled for today, December 2nd, 2019. The time is 1:10 p.m. And I'd like to thank all the committee members for being timely and appearing so we can move this forward. And, Jerry, I'd ask you to take roll, please.
Representative Jelena Johnson.
Present.
Representative Luis Stutes. Note that Representative Stutes is absent. Member Skip Cook.
Here.
Member Connor Thomas.
Here.
Member Deb Fancher.
Here.
Member Joyce Anderson. Joyce Anderson absent. Member Lee Holmes. Absent. Alternate public member Patrick Fitzgerald.
Here.
With that, we have a quorum to do business with four public members and one legislative member.
Okay, thank you. The first item is the approval of the agenda, which is in tab J of the binder that you should have. And so at this time, I would ask if there's any changes or additions to the agenda, and then if not, would entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I move to approve.
Second.
Any objections? Hearing no objections, the agenda is approved as outlined in tab J. The next part concerns public comment. Is there anybody either in person or on the telephone that would want to speak to the subcommittee? And if so, please identify yourself, and you would have the opportunity to do so.
We have no one present.
I don't hear anybody on the phone. I take it there's nobody in the public.
We have no one in the Anchorage Legislative Office Building present for public comment.
Okay. With that, then, public comments is closed. We'll move on now. The next matter concerns an executive session, which would require a motion. The reason for going into executive session is to discuss matters which by law must remain confidential under Alaska Statute 2460-170M, Committee Rules of Procedure Section 18H, Uniform Rule 22B regarding executive sessions, and Rule of Procedure Section 5. Executive sessions and the discussion of matters, the immediate knowledge which would adversely affect the finances of a governmental unit, and discussion of subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of a person. So with that, I would entertain a motion to go into executive session.
I shall move. This is Skip.
Okay. Any objections to moving into executive session? Hearing none, I would ask Jackie to put up the signs on the doors, and then let us know when we can we can proceed in executive session. This is the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, the House Subcommittee returning from executive session into public session. The time is 1:28. Is there, I'll ask if there's any other business that needs to come before the committee today. Hearing none, then I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Any objection? Without objection, the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics House Subcommittee meeting is hereby adjourned. The time is 1:28. And thank you all so much for your participation and speedy resolution of the issues before us. So, thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Connor. Okay. Sorry for the difficulties with technology.
Yeah.